Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Welcome to the Hollywood Casino Press Box with your host, Frank Cusimano.
Here's the pitch. Right there, there it is! Into left field! It's number 3,000! A run is scored! Musial ran first! On his way to second with a double!
The best interviews and the most informed insight.
And that's McGaffey breaking free, has a seam, and a crease! The kicker can't trip him up! Headed for the end zone! Will it be back-to-back weeks? Yes!
All tied together with the experience of over 20 years of local broadcasting excellence in St. Louis.
Now Stasny gets away from a check to Fabry. Wide open. Oh, rebound. He scores. Trevor. The former Blackhawk has given the Blues a 3-2 lead.
Now, here is Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Good morning and welcome. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Frank Cusimano with you till 12. Good one lined up again today. We're going to be joined by the British Bushbomb, Oliver Connolly, who knows more about football, college, and the NFL than anybody in the world. Chris Kerber on the Blues. Who's playing goal tonight? We all know who should be playing goal tonight. Martin will be here at 11 and at 11:20, the awesome one, Earl Austin Jr. I appreciate Marquette finally finishing off Creighton last night, because I don't think they were going to get to the Billiken game on CBS Sports. What a freaking game, though, Brian. You were thrilled.
I was. I thought for sure they were going to wave off that the Hauser three at the end. I was, I guess, just only because they ruled it good to start. That's the only reason why it stayed. I feel like if they hadn't, then they would have lost. How about a nice little back-to-back on CBS Sports, though?
Oh, yeah.
A channel I don't watch, I guess, kind of, I guess, Spectrum would put that in the same category as WB, a channel that very few people, or WGN, a channel that very few people watch. But that was a good back-to-back doubleheader.
Yeah, they got their money's worth last night. That's
really
like 5 hours of incredible basketball. All right, our opening monologue is brought to you by Gateway Motorsports Park, and let's begin with lap one. The Billikens, they have to be one of the best teams ever who really can't shoot it. They really do. They're going to make the NCAA tourney. They're going to be one of the top two teams in the conference. They're going to pack Shavitz from time to time, but they will not shoot it. Last night, they opened up, I think, 1 of 13 from 3. I told you before the games were even played, when I'd go to practice, and I'd see these guys with, like, managers rebounding for them, and these guys with nobody on them, with no crowd, with no defense, shooting and shooting and missing and missing and missing, and nothing has changed. But, man, do they do some things well. They defend like hell. They play so hard. They share the ball. They get to the rim. They finish. They rebound. They compete. They do everything but shoot. And if they shoot it, if they shoot it okay, which is still possible, maybe if Wiley gets going, they could really be good. Now, last night, oh, what a performance by Hassan French, a career-high 25. He even made his free throws last night. And then Tremaine Isabel, 17-7-7. That's a good victory. I mean, UMass is not great, but boy, you just got to keep winning these games. You have to protect your home court, and they did it. Let's hear from Travis Ford after the game.
Going forward, we have to play better, but I did tell our team this. Sometimes when you look back, if you're fortunate enough to win an 8-10 championship or something, you look back at games like this that you won that, you know, could have went either way, and you really weren't your best. Sometimes you have to win. You have to win when you're not your best. Good teams do that. I don't know if I'll put us in that category, but some good teams have to win when they're not their best.
Billikens 11-4. They're on the road. Leave Friday for LaSalle, and then they'll play LaSalle Saturday and Fordham on Tuesday. Let's go to lap two of the Gateway Motorsports Park opening monologue. Trevor Rosenthal, always been one of my favorites from the day he showed up. First of all, really a good player. And then second, very humble, very soft-spoken, nice man, very polite, and he happens to throw a ball 99 miles per hour. And how he was discovered as a pitcher is just an unbelievable story. I was telling everybody from Mike Bush to Andy Moeller yesterday at the station, everybody was riveted. We will let Trevor pick up the story. Remember, he was a shortstop at Colley Community College in Kansas.
I did something, you know, I slept through a practice, kind of punishment. I had to sit for a few games. Then when I came back, had a bad game, and basically they sent me out to the bullpen. I came in, and I was throwing you know, 97 miles an hour, and there happened to be a scout in the stands. And so after that game, the next morning, the coaches called me in, and they said, you know, what do you think about pitching from here on out and not playing in the field anymore? I was like, well, that's kind of stupid. I don't want to pitch.
You were an everyday shortstop.
Exactly. I was like, there's no way. I like playing shortstop. I want to hit and all these other things. I don't want to pitch. And they said, well, the scout was in the stands yesterday, and he thinks that you should only pitch from here on out. And that was kind of the end of discussion. And I pitched for the remainder of the season. And, you know, like I said, there were scouts in the stands every game. And it just kind of happened overnight. It was a whirlwind.
And he has pitched on some of the biggest stages in the world. He's an all-star. He has a $6 million salary for this season and a $10 million mutual option for 2020. He's only 28 years old. He can set up, you know, enough funding for his grandchildren's grandchildren if he continues to pitch till he's 35. And why not with that Tommy John repaired arm? What a story. Isn't that wild, too? Let's just say, Brian, that that scout is not there that day. And Trevor at Colley Community College does come in to pitch, but, you know, nobody sees it. And what happens? And then he goes back and plays shortstop.
Goes back and plays short. My takeaway from that clip is, why does the manager have such a disdain for the bullpen?
Right.
Why is that punishment?
Hey, go to the bullpen. You break curfew, you don't show up.
How's that supposed to make the other relievers feel?
Yeah. That's a good point. But do you ever think about that, like, moments in your life where, like, what if I wasn't there at that time? Like, you know what I think of? I think of 1980, senior year of high school, when I'm working at a weightlifting place called Nautilus. What if I'm not working when a certain 5'4", dark-haired Greek woman comes in who's 18 years old at Villa Duchenne? What if I'm not working at that moment and I don't see her? My life would be dramatically different. Not saying it's going to be worse, but I would not know Monique.
You would have had that hot tub and recliner a lot sooner.
That's right. I'd be driving Ray Donovan's car, dating lots of chicks. No, I was lucky to be there at that time. But how about moments in your life where, what if you weren't there at that time? Plowsy, do you have one of those moments?
I would say most recently would be when I got hired to be in radio. I was an intern for Joe Roderick, did my Man and the Woman experience, you know, that kind of...
That was your original...
That was my original. So 920 hired me as a weekend board op, and I happened to fill in for TMA one day, and that's that.
Wow.
So, I mean, and I was one job interview away from getting out of radio in general. And so that was kind of my last opportunity, and here I am today. So I'd say that, you know, if I didn't take that interview or didn't, if somebody wasn't sick that day and I filled in on TMA, I wouldn't be here.
Yeah. So you got that going for you.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how you feel.
Pretty
about
depressing.
That.
Wish I would have got out 5 years ago, Frank. It's a bummer.
All right, lap three. Now, yesterday was quite a day for the program. In addition to having Trevor in studio for almost 40 minutes, Isaac Bruce joined the program. It will be the story around, I guess it's Super Bowl Saturday when they're officially announced. Another St. Louis Ram entering the hall. Think about this. You got Orlando Pace, you have Kurt Warner, you have Marshall Faulk, you have Aeneas Williams, and now it could be Isaac Bruce. I think the chances are good, but I do know that Ed Reed is a 9-time Pro Bowler, and he's going to get more support. I do know that Champ Bailey is a 12-time Pro Bowler, and he's probably going to get more support. And Tony Gonzalez is like the most prolific tight end of all time, and he's going to get more support. So you have a couple of spots left, but I think Isaac has a great shot. Wouldn't it be cool if it was Steve Atwater and Isaac and then Don Coryell? Well, you talk about a St. Louis flavor. Well, those news directors better get ready to spend some money in Canton. We're covering that. So I think Isaac has a great shot. Only receiver on the list. 3-time finalist. Statistically, Hall of Fame worthy. Character, Hall of Fame worthy. Here's Isaac on the potential moment.
I'll tell you what, Martin. It's like this, man. You know, most of your career, or when you get drafted, then, you know, in your career, you know, you have sports writers and TV analysts describe and say why you are a Hall of Famer. And then it switches once you retire. You know, they start to nitpick your career and want to say why you aren't right now. So, you know, it's kind of been that way the last 3 seasons. But, you know, I'm excited. And just an opportunity to go back to a city where we had so much great success in winning a Super Bowl. and being there for those two reasons, man, I'm going to have fun with it.
Yep. He'll get the announcement, hopefully in a hotel room in Atlanta, Saturday night of Super Bowl weekend. If you guys had to guess, both of you, if Isaac is in Canton in late July giving that induction speech, does he mention Kurt Warner's name?
I think so.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
He's a genuinely nice guy, and I think he knows Kurt was influential in him being there. So I would think he would, you know, put aside any beef or anything and thank Kurt Warner for being there.
Hey,
for sure.
Tell me, along those lines, I'm glad you brought that up, Plazzi. Tell me of a great wide receiver that didn't have a great quarterback. I mean, I guess Terrell Owens, but he had Steve Young.
He had McNabb.
Yeah.
What about Tim Brown before Gannon? Did he have anyone?
Well, Gannon won an MVP that year, but he would not qualify as a great quarterback. That's
right.
Good.
Tim Brown.
Man, that's a...
See, Jerry Rice had Montana. Art Monk. You know, Art Monk had like three decent quarterbacks.
Yeah.
What about the Seattle wide receiver?
I mean, Andre Reed. Steve Largent had Jim Zorn and...
I remember Zorn. I forgot the other one. So, average, a little bit above average, yeah. I guess, quarterback play there.
We got to see if we can come up with one wide receiver just played with just average to below quarterback.
I'd say Greg Jennings.
Yeah.
Antonio Freeman.
Yeah, you know, those guys that played with Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, for sure. If Randy Moss played for Culpepper and Brady, I mean, you got the elite wide receivers. I mean, you have one quarterback attached to them for at least their prime years.
Yeah, so, like, I bring this up, like, because of this Antonio Brown situation. What if Antonio Brown, like... leaves the Steelers and goes and plays in Jacksonville, and Blake Bortles was throwing him balls.
What about, I know this is a tight end, what about Tony Gonzalez? I guess he had Green.
Well, Trent Green, who threw for 4,000 yards three consecutive years.
That, he didn't have really
what about
much of anyone.
Steve Smith and Jake Delhomme?
That's not bad.
That's a good one.
But he had Cam Newton toward the end of his career, I guess. He had a long stretch, so.
Huh. All right, lap four, let's stay with the NFL. So Sean Payton is my new favorite coach in the world. You've heard the story, I'm sure. He enters the Saints locker room the other day with four armored guards, wheeling in the Super Bowl trophy and $225,000 cash. What's the most amount of cash? I've held a $1,000 bill once.
I've never even held like more than a couple hundred dollars in cash in hand.
Look at this. This drug dealer's got a story.
I was going to say, I've seen hefty amounts of cash. All under the table.
All IRS approved.
But,
sure.
Yeah, so I've seen my fair share. I haven't actually myself held, you know, but maybe a few hundred dollars at a time.
Okay. All right, so he yells, too, "Y'all want this? Then win three blanking games." The place erupted. The $225,000 is what each player would make for winning the Super Bowl this year. How do you not love that? Let's listen to a couple of New Orleans Saints players.
I wanted to come to my house, Lombardi, the glass box of cash, my ring, all that. I want that same presentation. I don't want no direct deposits from this, you know, playoffs. I want all my cash when we done, you know, at the end. I want my cash coming to the crib looking just like they had it the other day, so. Yeah, that looks nice.
If you saw all that money in front of you, you get excited too. Oh, that's anybody gonna get excited about that? And I'm right along with him. If we get it done, I need that. I need it in 20s, all in a duffel bag, delivered to my front door. That's what I need. But yeah, I mean, listen. Sean does a great job of getting us ready. You know, he kind of knows, you know, what buttons to push and, you know, kind of how to pique guys' interest. So, you know, for him to do that and, you know, kind of get guys, you know, even more excited than they already are than, you know, to play a playoff game. I think guys are amped up and ready to go.
Brian, was that last one the really good one? Was that Ingram or Sheldon Rankins?
That was Sheldon Rankins. The first one was Mark Ingram.
Sheldon Rankins is the sack guy, right?
From Louisville, yes. Like 24, eight sacks this year for Nollins.
Wow. Yeah, that's neat. I'd like to get it in 20s, too. You know,
sounded like he was about to go to the strip club, it seemed like. I need him in 20s and all in a duffel bag.
So that leads us to a topic, best motivational speeches. And, you know, Kurt Russell and Miracle playing the role of head coach Herb Brooks. And I guess Herb Brooks' speech was actually even better. But Al Pacino, in terms of the big screen, any given Sunday, let's take a listen.
Because in either game, life or football, the margin for error is so small. I mean, one half a step too late or too early, and you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us.
Hell yeah.
They're in every break of the game, every minute, every second. On this team, we fight for that inch. On this team, we tear ourselves and everyone else around us to pieces for that inch. We claw with our fingernails for that inch. Because we know when we add up all those inches, that's going to make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying. I'll tell you this, in any fight, it's the guy who's willing to die who's going to win that itch. And I know if I'm going to have any life anymore, it's because I'm still willing to fight and die for that itch. Because that's what living is. The 6 inches in front of your face. Now, I can't make you do it. You got to look at the guy next to you. Look into his eyes. Now, I think you're going to see a guy who will go that inch with you. You're going to see a guy who will sacrifice himself for this team because he knows when it comes down to it, you're going to do the same for him.
Wow. Good stuff. His voice sounds the same, like, you know, whether he's playing an attorney in Injustice for All, Any Given Sunday. The only one he was kind of dull was with Paterno movie. Obviously, he was playing an older man, but God, that's passionate. All right, lap five. The note tonight, the second half of the season begins. It's time to make the run. It's time to get smoking hot. Everybody texting in right now. I want one answer from you. If you are Craig Berube, and we're going to know very shortly from Chris Kerber at 10:45. If you are Craig Berube, who do you start in goal tonight? Everybody texting in, you can say Jordan or Jake. Winning streak text line 855-282-8255. 855-282-8255. Jordan or Jake. I have a feeling that this vote is going to be like Reagan Mondale. I mean, I can't picture somebody saying, yeah, I got to start Jake. Yeah, we got to go back to Jake. I'm anxious to see what Chris has to say, too. But we'll know for sure 10:45. All right, lap six, stream of consciousness. Boy, Brian made good friends with the people from Onesto when he was gushing about it. As we mentioned, we were headed there for Frank's Food Picks. They all heard about it, all excited. It was unbelievable. I don't think we've ever eaten so much food in our life. They brought out lasagna, fettuccine alfredo, rustic ziti, two large pizzas, tiramisu. They did it like Rick
What
Majerus.
Were the entrees, though? Those were the appetizers?
They did have some... oh, Brian, did you mention the garlic little...
Yes, yeah, the garlic knots.
Yes. Little garlic balls. Unbelievable. So, like, we ate it. This is interesting because he and I, Tom and I were at a table, and they had a separate table of just our buffet food. And so then I'm reading yesterday in the St. Louis Business Journal, Dr. Richard Chavitz is talking about how he thinks NBA is a good thing for St. Louis, and he'd be like to get involved. But he tells this story about Majerus, that they went to restaurants on the hill, and they would always have like two tables, one table for them to eat and another table where everything on the menu was brought out on a separate table. So I thought about Rick Majerus and Dr. Chavitz yesterday. Ray Donovan, I tell you, as Monique mentioned, there's nothing redeeming, and she's right, but I can't turn it off. One episode a night. The car, the clothes, the women, this guy's really cool. I'm probably going to go to hell, and this will be the reason. Ray Donovan, watching that and enjoying it. And then finally, a quick thought about the turtleneck. We wore it yesterday on television. It did create a little bit of a stir. Been compared to everybody from Ron Burgundy to Sean Connery.
Even Howard Richards chimed in on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, that little. Oh, gosh. So I caught a lot of heat for it, but I did like it, and most of it was positive. So, you know what, though? Last night, at like 11:30, I turn on Showtime's NFL show, James Brown, one of the most stylish men in television, he's wearing the turtleneck. I may go back to it.
And I can't help but notice that you're breaking out a new wardrobe right around the time that one of the local news stations is blacked out for a pretty good portion of the city.
So because they're sampling now. Any Fox 2 viewer,
yes.
They can't watch it anymore. So they're going, oh, hey, that guy wears nice turtlenecks.
That stylish dressed sports guy. Right.
And then I just got this message from a friend here in town. Frank, my daughter Tess is a producer of a morning show at the NBC down in Dallas. She has the idea of running a quick little story about the upcoming Dallas Rams game and was looking for an angle about how people in St. Louis would be cheering for Dallas, you know, against the Rams. And I want to email them back. We're not going to be able to watch the game because of Fox 2, you know? That's right. We'd like to root for the Cowboys, but we can't find the game, so... All right, let's take a short time out. When we come back, he is the best in the business. He's Oliver Connolly talking NFL draft and NFL playoffs.